I'm excited for tonight. I'm excited that all of you came tonight because we are in for a rare treat. We're going to talk about credit, repairing credit, managing credit, and building credit. And we're also going to talk about on a personal level and also on a business level. And tonight we have Brian Fleming. This is probably the closest person that I know that could be called my brother. Okay, we've traveled the world together.
Yes, we have.
And interesting thing, I'll just give you a quick short primer. I didn't know Brian in college. Okay, I went to the University of Memphis. Brian went to the University of Memphis. I moved to Syracuse. I went to grad school at Syracuse. Graduated. Brian came to Syracuse. Went to Syracuse. Graduated. And we're downtown in Syracuse, and we're at some kind of a meet and greet networking thing.
First Friday,
and you know, Brian's standing there. I've been there a couple of times. It was his first time. I'm standing in the back, and this tall guy stands up and says, "Hey, I'm new to the community. You know, I graduated from the University of Memphis." My ears perked up. Came here to grad school. Graduated from Syracuse. My other ear perked up. I was like, "We gonna talk, okay?" So, and since then we've been friends, and you know, he's adopted family now. And I'm excited because you're going to hear from Brian a testimony this evening. He's going to be sharing the testimony. In the same format that we've done in the past, we're going to start off with a testimony. What has God done in his life? How did he get to do what he's doing now? And how did he birth what he's doing? And then he's going to go into consumer credit. So without further ado, I'm going to just say this last thing. We often say to people that education is the key. How many people have heard people say that? Got to get an education. Okay. Well, that's true. And most of the times when people are saying that, they're talking about a high school education, a college education. And I'm here to tell you that that's limiting. You can have a great education. But if you don't have another thing called a FICO score to go along with that education, your education is still limited. The same thing is true when we talk about the spirit. You can be spiritually mature, but if you don't have practical understanding and wisdom and knowledge of how to operate in this world, which this class is all about, your opportunity to grow is limited. So tonight, what we're going to talk about is that other side that we don't really talk about a lot, that is oftentimes taboo in families because people don't want to put their business out there and have people look at them. And Brian's going to share. And he's going to talk to these things. So without further ado, Brian Fleming.
Thank you. First of all, I would like to thank Sasha Milligan for giving me the opportunity to come here and speak with you guys and gals. Sorry about that. I'm having some issues with it coming up. And I'd like to thank the pastor as well as the leadership here at the church for inviting me as well. My name is Brian Fleming. I am the owner of Spring Hill Credit Solutions. So that's my first presentation that I'm going to give to you guys. And my second presentation, I'm going to show you all how to get access to funding that is not tied to your social. My name is Brian Fleming. I'm the owner of Spring Hill Credit Solutions, number one. Number two, I am also the owner of Spring Hill Financial Solutions. In our credit company, we basically specialize in fixing credit. In my business funding company, we have a niche where we assist our clients with getting access to funding through their EIN instead of their social. So, testimony of me, how I got into this industry. Like Sasha said, my background is totally not what I'm doing right now. My background is in engineering. So like Sasha said, I got my master's degree in computer engineering from Syracuse University when I came up here. That's when I met Sasha. How I got into this business or the credit industry is I used to be a real estate investor, was flipping property in Northern Jersey, Newark, East Orange, and I got into the market right at the end of the bubble, made some money, thought I was going to be doing pretty well. Then that bubble bursted on me, and it bursted. So I had a business partner at the time, and what we would do is we would purchase the property, we would rehab the property, and we would try to find buyers. Most of our buyers didn't have good credit, so we would push our clients off to other credit repair houses in hope that, hey, it'll be done by the time that we got the property done and we put them in, get our money out, go purchase another property, and let's do it over again. Well, a lot of times, you know, we did not get the service that we thought that we were gonna get. Partly because the companies did not set the expectations of credit repair. Meaning that if it took you 10 years to mess up your credit, I don't have a magic wand to fix it in 3 months. Now, can it be fixed in 3 months? Yes. But I'm not going to guarantee that because according to CROA, Credit Repair Organizations Act, I can go to jail. And I don't know about y'all, but my body's not built for jail. Okay? So I like y'all, but I don't love you. So I'm not going to guarantee results, but I am going to tell you that we're going to fight hard to make sure that we clean up your credit. I'm kind of flowing right now. So if any of you are looking at credit repair companies, what I would advise you is this: make sure that the company has skin in the game, meaning that a company should not be charging you all this money up front and you're chasing them to fix your credit. Okay? According to CROA, Credit Repair Organizations Act, in that federal law, it states that we are supposed to do a reasonable service first and then invoice you for that service. So, in other words, we're doing the work, we're getting the results, then we invoice you. So, we're chasing you to pay the invoice instead of the reverse. It lowers the risk on your end, it increases the risk on a company like Spring Hill. So, that's an example of if you're looking at a credit repair company. So, credit went bad. So I started playing around, trying to say, okay, then let me try to figure this out. Let me try to fix my own credit. Me and my business partner at the time, because we were not making any money in the business, we were like, okay, well, what are we gonna do? Let's take a look at this credit thing. You know what I'm saying? I mean, we weren't really getting good service. Maybe we can give good service. It is a whole nother world in the credit industry. It's not as easy as you think. For instance, I have a credit repair kit that I normally send to people if they want to do their own credit. If you want that, I'm gonna give you my card. If you want that, I'll send it to you. There's no problem. And it has so much information in it that one of my barbers was like, hey, you know, Brian, you know, I want to fix my credit, but I don't want to pay you. So I was like, cool, Alan. I'm gonna send you the credit repair kit. He's like, yeah, because I don't think it's that hard. You know, what are you doing, just send out letters? I'm like, maybe. So I sent him the kit, and because I get my hair cut every week. The next week, I said, Alan, what's going on with that credit repair kit? He was like, man, yo, it's so much information in there. And I was like, yeah, you think I'm just over here just playing around? It's a lot of information. But at the same time, it's no different than you getting up under the hood of your car. Do you want to fix your engine? You can do that. Or would you do something else where you're more valuable and pay somebody to do it? So that's what happened to me. So I fixed my credit, went into the whole industry, got compliance training, learned a whole lot about the credit bureaus, and the shenanigans and the shadiness of the credit industry, which I'm going to show you if I get my presentation up. And it's going to pull your wig back on some things, because it actually was like, whoa, to me. Because we think that, for instance, we think that the industry is basically government ran, and it is not. They are capitalist. And sometimes they get on the edge of greediness. As for you as a consumer. Cool. So So that's my testimony of getting into the industry. It spun off into me helping my clients with fixing their credit. A lot of my business clients were like, Brian, you fixed my credit, so can you give me some money? And at first I was like, no, because I'm just going to concentrate on credit repair. I'm going to push you over here to this person. Then I became a capitalist. And I said, what? I'm like, hey, maybe I can make some money off this too. So then I studied business credit, stayed in the credit industry, and it has opened up so many things for business owners and real estate investors for getting access to cash without being tied to your social. So that is my testimony. Now, I want to have a good testimony of getting this presentation up for you. Now, my presentation is from a perspective of being in the credit industry as a credit repair professional. So I'm not going to get up here and have a boring conversation with you guys about this is your credit, this is your score. We're going to get to that, but it's going to be some other information of you being able to have control over your scores. Sure. Yes.
How do you pay it back if it's not coming from your social, and how is it a?
It is going to be tied to your credit profile of your business.
Yes.
So it's no different than you using a regular credit card personally.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Any other questions while I'm?
Credit card.
Cool. Call. Basically, are you in good standing with your card?
Yeah.
Call in.
I pay it like probably about a week before.
How long have you had the card?
Several years.
And okay, so basically, I tell them this. Listen, I love your business. I've been with you for X amount of years, I'm in good standing, haven't missed a payment. In fact, I pay early. So I would like to have a decrease, or I'm going to go take my business someplace else. Now don't do it, because I don't want you to close your card. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But you gotta give them you're important just like they're important. You know what I'm saying?
You know what their response is? They send me something in the mail saying they want to raise up my credit limit.
And that's cool, because
yeah.
that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Any other questions while I am?
Is EIN for like I have two corporations. Can you have an EIN with an LLC, a corporation, or a DBA? Or you don't have to have any of that?
Are you saying you can have an EIN for a DBA or?
I mean, I have a corporations, and I understand that has an EIN associated with it, which is like a social number for the company.
Yes.
Can you have an EIN if you're not incorporated, don't have an LLC, don't have or do you have a DBA? Can you have such a thing as an EIN without?
You need an entity, sir.
Okay, that's right.
You do need an entity, absolutely. I would advise you not to do the DBA, but at least I don't know what type of business or businesses that you own, but you got to talk to your accountant about which, from tax purposes, which is best. But any LLC or corporation or S Corp, C Corp, yeah, you can definitely get an EIN. You're definitely going to get access to funding without you being the person to guarantee you the money. Yes, you want to create another profile that's not tied to you. So, any other questions before I start?
Just wondering what's like the rule, the recommendation for like an open credit card? Would you not close it and just spend on it and then pay it right off? Or what's the detriment of closing it and, you know?
I'm going to answer that in the presentation.
Okay.
I'm definitely going to answer it in the presentation. All right, cool. So we are ready. So the title of my presentation for credit is Secrets, Myths, and Misconceptions About Your Credit. Right. So today's topics, what I'm going to talk to you about is how credit affects you. Number one. Number two, credit 101. That's going to be the boring part, but it's going to be very important. Credit myths, as well as we're going to talk about some ways to improve your credit as well. Right? So first, my first chart is, did you know? Did you know that the credit bureaus, I kind of said this a little bit, are for-profit organizations publicly traded on Wall Street or privately held? They put the bureau in it, making it seem like it's a government-type agency. It is a lie. Can I say that? It's a lie? Okay. I'm at church, so I mean. So Equifax. Equifax is trading on the New York Stock Exchange. Its stock has gone up 400%+ since March of 2009. They make a lot of money off of us. Experian is not even American. Experian is headquartered in Dublin, Ireland. Right? It's traded on the London Stock Exchange. Its stock is up 300% since March of 2009. They make a lot of money off of us. TransUnion is privately owned, wait for it, by Goldman Sachs. They make a lot of money off of us. There's a reason why I'm telling you these things. Remember, I'm coming from an angle of being in credit repair and seeing some things on the other side of pretty, dealing in this industry. Each credit bureau has revenues of $2 to $4 billion with the B per year. Now, this is the part where I deal with a lot of my clients. The credit bureaus make the most money in what we call the sweet spot in your credit score. FICO has a range of 300 to 850, right? The sweet spot is anywhere between 640 to 699. We call it the sweet spot is because your creditors, your banks, your financial institutions, they can make the most money off of you in that range. They pay a premium for that data to purchase that to sell to you guys, right? And so with this information, what I'm telling you is that the credit bureaus, they're for profit, they're capitalists. You know, we know how much money they make. They make money in various ways. What is the incentive of them to clean up your credit if you are in the sweet spot? Now, I'm not saying that they are intentionally doing this, but it's not an urgency. You see what I'm saying? They hate credit repair companies, right? So part of my testimony, what I should have said too, adding in, is I like to pick a fight. And I pick a fight every day with the credit bureaus because they do some shady stuff. According to CNN, 79% of credit reports have errors. 79%. Now, this could be your name could be misspelled. Your address could be wrong. Your social security number could be incorrect. I had a client a couple years ago where we went through a lot to correct his social security number. Now, he didn't have any identity theft issues, but at the same time, he could have with the wrong score, with the wrong number. A couple of years ago, the credit bureaus were attempting to enter into the credit repair industry. Now, wouldn't it be a conflict of interest? You're supposed to be holding my data and it's supposed to be correct. Now, why are you entering into over here? I thought you hated us. They hate us because they got to spend a lot of money looking at all these disputes. But they also saw that, hey, a lot of companies are making a lot of money off of us, so let's try to enter into this. Believe it or not, the credit repair industry have lobbyists in Washington, and we fault them. So they are not able to do that. There is no law requiring creditors to report information to credit bureaus unless for delinquent child support payments. So I had a couple of clients, and they'll call a creditor, like, oh, you know, I missed a payment, you know, last month. It's by accident. I'm in good standing, you know, with my card and everything. So I don't know what happened, blah, blah, blah. And the representative would tell them, well, according to law, blah, 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 it's not a law. There's a policy within their company, but they don't want to say policy because then that opens up for you to wiggle your way into, you know, correcting that if you can. So, how credit affects you. Well, I'm not going to go through this slide because it would be better if you see it, so I'm just going to move on. So, what is a credit score? A credit score is a number representing the credit worthiness of a person and how likely that person is to pay their debts, right? Pretty simple. What is the credit score range? For FICO, is 300 to 850. And just because you have a credit score in the 800s does not mean that you're going to get approved for financing. You may not have enough on your credit report for that financial institution to approve you for financing. Not in all cases, but I just want to let you know there are some cases where people have an 800 credit score and they're all happy and they're polishing it up and putting it on the shelf. And then they're like, well, I got denied. Well, because you don't have very much on your credit report. What is considered to be a good credit score? 700 and above. Remember, we want, in the way that we work is a lot of my clients are on the left side of the sweet spot. So I try to get them into the sweet spot first so they can do what they need to do. Buy a car, whatnot, get a house. But I want them to stay in the program so we can make sure their scores are 700 and above. So 700 and above is good to great. That's where we want y'all to be. What is the average credit score in America? 723. FICO. FICO stands for Fair Isaac Corporation. It is the company that has created the gold standard algorithm for how pretty much the financial industry look at your credit, right? So basically, they are not part of the credit bureaus. The credit bureaus pay FICO to use its algorithm, so they're completely separate from the credit bureaus. In order for you to calculate your FICO score, you need to have at least an account open at least 6 months, a positive account. And you must have an account that is reporting at least 6 months, within the last 6 months as well, to get a score. That's how they kickstart the algorithm. Credit scores are damaged by the most recently reported derogatory information. That's like, duh, but I mean, I wanted to put that in there because whenever you get a late payment, say for instance, you got a late payment in May 2019. Right? Two years from now, it's not going to be as negative in your score as what it is today. Derogatory information reported prior to 2 years does not highly impact your credit score. So anything outside the two-year mark, it goes down in the algorithm as far as how negatively it impacts your score. So it's still on your credit, but it's not impacting your score as much as it was within the two-year mark. FICO is designed to measure your future credit risk. And basically, it's basically measure how if you're moving close to bankruptcy or away from bankruptcy. That's how they do the model. So I know that you all probably have seen many different scores when different entities are pulling your credit and probably have a question about, well, why are my scores different here versus over there? Within FICO, FICO has 16 different scorecards in its algorithm. And each scorecard reflects, you know, a different credit score. And the scorecards are basically for different industries. So like a mortgage company will pull your credit, and you're like, okay, my score is kind of low, I don't understand, because when my car dealership pulled my credit, it was a little bit higher. It's because it weighs how well you have basically paid a previous mortgage. So it's more heavier on the mortgage end, if you had a mortgage. On the auto, they weigh more how well have you paid your auto loan in the past. So your scores are going to be up and down. Yes, sir. They do, absolutely. And some auto dealerships, auto dealerships probably will pull for only one credit bureau. But a mortgage, of course, they're going to do a tri-merge and then look at your middle score. Yep. Now, There are five basic scoring factors that you can control. This is the only information that FICO has given us to be able to improve our credit. I'm about to go over them right now. Number one is payment history. Payment history is 35% of your score, basically how well you pay your debts. Number two is your debt ratio. This debt ratio is 30% of your score. And basically how well are you, what is your utilization of your credit that's been given to you? So as you can tell, payment history and debt ratio is basically 65% of your score. That's basically, you know, 2/3 of your score, right? 15% of your score is the length of credit history, basically the age of your credit report. The oldest positive account on your credit report determines the age of your credit report. Inquiries. How many of you all got questions about inquiries? I usually get a bunch of those. Inquiries is only 10% of your score. I have a lot of people, a lot of my clients tell me, Brian, you know, I got an inquiry and my credit score went down 20 points. No, I don't think so. It's only 10% of your score, right? Something else is going on. 70% of inquiries do not affect your credit score, right? And the way the FICO algorithm is written, they have three items where you can get an infinite amount of inquiries within a 30-day period, and it will only count as one inquiry in your score. That's the auto loan, that's the mortgage, and student loans. So you can have 100 inquiries in May, you know, auto loan, because you know they're gonna pull your credit to get you the best rate. You know what I'm saying? So it's not a bad thing. It looks bad on your credit because you're like, okay, this is like five pages of inquiries. What's going on? You can have 100 in May, and then you didn't purchase the car until June, and they pulled your credit again in June. That's only going to count as two inquiries on your credit score. Now, unfortunately, some financial company or some average people will look at your credit if you're trying to go after something else, and they'll see all these inquiries, services that you're trying to get some business funding. They're like, oh man, you got so many inquiries, but they're not even really seeing that you got all these inquiries within a 30-day period, and it's an auto loan. So they'll deny you on the spot, like, oh, we can't put you in because you got too many inquiries. But it's like you're not even looking at what's going on because it did not affect my score. You're just seeing information on my credit report. So that's like a pet peeve of mine. I don't really like that, but that's what they do. And last 10% is the types of credit used. And that's basically that it grows organically. And basically, in order to get the majority of that portion of your score, 10%, you need two credit cards, two installment loans, and one mortgage. That's it. All right, so we talked about the 16 scoring models within FICO. Now I'm gonna tell you about Vantage Scores. Anybody heard of Vantage Scores? All right, cool. So this is the Credit Bureau's secret credit score. The credit bureaus, they got together, only time they got together, as one because they wanted to make some money, and they wanted to compete with FICO, right? So they created this model, they pushed it out into the marketplace and said, hey, you know, we want you to use this, but we know that FICO is the gold standard. Everybody's been using FICO for a minute, right? So what happened is they created the model, but the range did not match what FICO was. Remember, my FICO was 300 to 850, right? Vantage Scores back when they created it was 501 to 990. I don't know why they did that. And the industry was like, well, we can use this, but it just seemed like the scores are kind of inflated. We don't know whether we are giving money to people that don't really qualify for it, so they squashed it. They were like, no, we're not going to use Vantage. We want FICO. So the credit bureaus went back to their cave, and they said, okay, then we're just going to match what the FICO is doing, right? But to be honest with you, I don't even know. Remember the percentages I just gave you, the payment history, debt ratio, blah. We don't know what those percentages are, right? So the majority The Vantage scores that you probably see are probably online services, Credit Check Total, all these companies that are online. And a lot of times, the scores look kind of inflated compared to when a mortgage rep pulls it or when an auto dealership pulls your credit, and because those are Vantage scores. So that's another way that the credit bureaus are making money off of you, is that they own a lot of these credit monitoring companies. You just don't know that. And they're making money off you by pushing the Vantage score to you. You're thinking, oh, my credit is a 680. Then when the mortgage rep pulls it 640, you're like, what's going on, right? Okay, cool. Next is your right to accuracy. It begins with the Fair Credit Reporting Act, FCRA. It spells out the rules and regulations the credit bureaus must follow, or should, before placing information on a person's credit report. It states information must be accurate and verified before it is entered into your credit report. And it also states any verified inaccuracies must be removed within a 30-day period. So this is what credit repair is. Bless you. This is what credit repair is. Every data item on your credit report needs to be 100% accurate, 100% verifiable, and 100% timely. Most companies do, we lean heavily on that. Or it needs to be corrected or removed. Meaning, accuracy. Every data item must be correct. Social Security number, you know, every data item in your accounts. Have you ever pulled a tri-merge and you're like, well, why is it the data, why my numbers are different, you know, on Experian and Equifax and TransUnion? Have you seen that? And the thing about it is, whatever day of the month way back when you open your account for that credit card, that is when that company pushes the data out to the credit bureaus, right? And they're pushing the same data to the credit bureaus. So why is the data different when you pull your tri-merge? That's where credit repair comes in, because a lot of people say, well, you know, is it legal? It's absolutely legal, because we lean on the Fair Credit Reporting Act. Everything needs to be 100% accurate, 100% verifiable, 100% timely, right? 100% verifiable means that you put the burden of proof on the creditors and the credit bureaus to make sure that the information is accurate, right? Timely means that, so for instance, that you have a collection agency that purchases a primary account legally. Let's say they purchase it legally. They cannot re-age the account. Basically, what goes like this. The statute of limitations, I'm thinking in New Jersey it's 7 years. In New York, I'm assuming it's probably the same thing in New York. Statute of limitations is 7 years that they can come after you for that debt. From the date of last activity on that account, the last time you paid, DOLA, date of last activity, a collection agency will come in and say, hey, you know, well, they haven't been paying on it for 2 years. I'm going to purchase this debt. I'm going to put it on their credit report, but I'm going to say that it opened today. Illegal. And you can sue them for that, right? That means they only got 5 more years to come after you for that debt, right? I had a client, I kid you not, Clarence, he had a debt. They were coming out to him since the 70s. I was a baby, y'all. Since the 70s. Credit myths. Paying off an old collection or charge-off will increase your credit score. No. The reason for that is because a collection or a charge-off is already a negative account. And remember that the most recent derogatory information posted on your credit report is going to decrease your scores. And because if the date of last activity has been moved up from way back when to now, when that company or that collection agency says, hey, it's been paid, right? I'm not telling you not to pay your bills. I'm just telling you what's going on with your credit, okay? So pay your bills. Next. Paying your credit card balances in full and keeping a zero balance is bad for my credit score. I think that you were asking me something like that. is not bad for your credit score. So basically what we want you to do is keep your credit balances at a 30% utilization or less. But there's a trick to this that I tell my clients. A credit report is nothing but a picture for that day, right? So you can have a bad hair day or a good hair day, right? So with respect to your credit card, we all use our credit cards differently. Some of us use our credit card, we're piling on the whole month and we pay it off, you know, every month or whatnot. If you know you're gonna get your credit pulled, all you gotta do is pay a little early, get the utilization down, you know what I'm saying? So they can when they release it out to the credit bureaus, your utilization will look like it's 30% or less. The day of the month, way back when you opened it, you call the company, say, hey, when did I open my card? And typically, it's probably your due date. You know what I'm saying? So I would say just pay about three or four days before then. So you know that, hey, it's been posted, and they're going to release good data to the credit bureau. So when you pull your credit, if you're trying to get your credit pulled, you know, you'll be good. Next, credit myth. It will take you 7 years to improve your credit. A selfless plug, not unless you hire us. I'm sorry. Not unless you hire a reputable credit repair company or if you fix your credit yourself. It should not take 7 years, especially if you know that every data, something on your credit report is not 100% accurate, 100% verifiable, and 100% timely. It is your right to get your credit to where it needs to be. Too many accounts will hurt your score, therefore you must close accounts. I think that was another, kind of like another part of your question. No, the reason being is because as you were writing down in your notes the percentages, it will hurt your debt ratio, number one, which is 30% of your score, but it will also hurt your length of credit history, which is 15% of your score, right? If I get one credit bureau to remove an item from my credit report, all the other bureaus will remove it automatically. No. The only time they talk together is when they came up with the Vantage Score model to make money. Okay, improve your credit. So, 5 steps to improve your credit. 1, get a copy of your credit report from all 3 major credit bureaus. Credit Karma, a lot of my clients try to get Credit Karma. Credit Karma only gives you 2 of your credit reports and scores. But if you don't want to pay any money, you want to see what's going on with those 2, do it, you know what I'm saying? But I'd rather have all 3 because you never know what that third one is looking like. 2, review your credit reports for errors. And you want to check your loan amounts. You want to check the account history on all accounts. And you also want to check your personal information. Dispute items that are not accurate, verifiable, and timely. And 4, keep your credit balances below 30%, which I kind of give you a little bit of a trick just in case your credit is being pulled. Low balances will improve your score. I tell my clients to request a credit limit increase every 6 months. I say aim for the stars. They may not give it to you, they may give you the moon. I'll call in and say, hey, I need a credit increase. I have a 5,000 card, 5,000 line of credit card. Yes?
Do they do an inquiry when you ask them to do that increase?
They will. So you gotta, you judge that, because they're gonna check your credit and see what's going on. But it's only 1 inquiry, you know, in your score. So basically, like I said, aim for the stars. They may give you the moon. I call in, Mr. Fleming, you know, what credit limit do you want? I tell them, hey, I know it's 5 right now, but I want 20. Well, Mr. Fleming, let me check to see. Pulling the credit, getting your inquiry. Well, Mr. Frontman, we can't give that to you, but we can give you 10. Cool, thank you. Talk to you in 6 months. Yes.
So you're saying even if you have a zero balance, it's good to have higher credit limits?
Absolutely. 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 Why not?
I didn't know that played a part.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Sure.
Microphone.
Young adult session a while ago, and we'll run through the numbers real quick, okay? So let's just say that you have a $5,000 credit limit, like Brian was saying, and you have $2,500 charged on the card. Your utilization rate right now is 50%. The moment in time that you call and request an increase, your utilization went from 50 to 25. So even if you have a zero balance today, I don't know what your economic activity is going to be 6 months, 8 months, 9 months down the road if you all of a sudden have to replace an engine in your car and you didn't have that in the emergency reserve. All of a sudden your furnace goes out or you need a new compressor for your air conditioning unit, if they even have air compressor. I don't know. I should stop. Technically challenged. But you can have some large ticket items that can come in all of a sudden. And overnight, you can reach your utilization ratio, and like Brian was saying, it's going to trigger both of those. By increasing your limit, you make sure that when you have that larger expense that shows up, you're still within those ratios.
And with that example, you're going from 50% to 25%, your score is going to shoot up because the debt ratio got better.
When they take an inquiry, is it a soft or hard inquiry when you call?
It will be a hard inquiry. Hard okay. Inquiry, absolutely. Only soft ones that I know of is from the credit monitoring companies online. But an inquiry, like I said, it's only 10% of your score. You're trying to get more money. I want money.
So companies on the same day, because it's in that 30-day period, it's only one inquiry, correct?
No, because that is not a student loan, mortgage, or student or
okay, so
or,
that's
or
the exceptions
loan.
For it.
Absolutely. It's okay. Going to be five different inquiries.
So that'd be five separate, okay.
Absolutely. Yep.
So when you do that 6 months, maybe circulate different cards, not a card a month, so to speak.
It just depends upon where your score is, where you are. Are you worried about the inquiries? Are you trying to go get something where they're going to be, like, looking at inquiries later on down the line?
Right.
Because after about a year, companies don't really look at the inquiries. They like to look at the last year of inquiries.
Okay. Awesome.
If they see that you... If it looks like you got like 1,000 inquiries within the last year, they're like, okay, are you going through bankruptcy or something? What's going on? That's the reason why they get scared.
Right.
But they don't really dive into it to see, well, I'm trying to get a car.
Right. Thank you.
No problem. Yep. No, you're good.
Should we be saving it for last?
I'm almost at the end.
Okay.
Actually, I am at the end. Let me say this one thing right quick before you say it. All right, so number five is pay all creditors on time. Everybody knows that, but I want to say that. So that's pretty much it for my presentation. I talked about credit and how it affects you. I gave you a credit education 101, some common credit myths, and some tips to improve your credit. I will have cards. I mean, and if you all do want the credit repair kit, I mean, I can send that to you. I don't mind. Yeah, definitely, absolutely. So I'll give you a card and all that good stuff. Yes, sir.
So when you get the free credit score from your credit card company like Bank of America and they give you the credit score, is that one question, is that really without an inquiry, is that damaging your score at all because they say that it doesn't?
I'm going to say no. If they say it doesn't, it does not. But you can check your credit to see exactly if it's on there, but I doubt that they're going to put a hard inquiry on your credit score.
I think when you sign up for them, it says it doesn't. At least when I did mine, but I did it through like USAA and the federal. I don't know if that bank is the same.
You can just easily check your credit and see exactly if the inquiry in the inquiry section of your credit, if you want to do that. Go to Credit Karma and just see but you got to know which credit bureau that they're giving you, so you can know that Credit Karma has. I don't use Credit Karma, so I don't know which of the credit bureaus that they use. To be honest with you, I use something else for my clients. But, I mean, if it's something free and it's something that Credit Karma can give you, check it. And then call them out on it if it's an inquiry on it.
they're the person that's giving you and able to see your score without it affecting you, that same credit company can increase your balance without having to do an inquiry, right? I would assume. Does that sound about right?
That's a good question. It should. You're right. They got access to your credit. Absolutely, but I mean, I'm learning something from you. That's a good question. I've never been asked that question before. But is the card reporting to all three credit bureaus? And this is probably more rhetorical than anything. You know what I'm saying? So they may not have an inquiry for that particular relationship with the credit bureau that you're getting, but we don't know about the other two. So are they putting inquiries on this? So that's something that you gotta ask as well. But I really wouldn't get so much caught up on inquiries because, I mean, I'd be more interested in paying my bills on time and making sure my utilization is low, you know what I'm saying?
I think it's important though, because they send it to you every month, right?
That particular credit score that they have a relationship.
They're sending you the score. Yeah. They're looking. So that essentially is an inquiry.
But we don't know because you said in the fine printing that it may not. They may not be putting an inquiry. They say they're not putting an inquiry on your credit report.
Right.
So he has to check. You have to check to see. Well, but they're telling you that you're not. But go to Credit Karma. If ask you know which credit bureau that they're using?
Right.
Thank you. But I'm asking him, the actual company, do you know which credit score you're getting?
No, they just say FICO. I don't think it says specifically.
All right, you need to ask where they're pulling from, and if it's pulling from any one of the two that Credit Karma has, I would take a look at that to see exactly if they put inquiries on. Yes, sir.
I just want to make one distinction real quick because I think one of the things that you said that I didn't even know until you mentioned it today, I knew about Vantage scores and I knew about FICO scores, but one of the things that we need to do as consumers is read the fine print. But the score that Credit Karma is reporting to you is not a FICO score. It's a Vantage score. And they give you that disclosure. Yes. It says calculated using VantageScore 3.0. And then when you click into it and for additional description, it tells you that they're using a different model. So this isn't necessarily the exact model that banks are going to be using or mortgage companies or dealerships or anybody else. This is yet another model that's out there, and it's giving disinformation. So they're pulling the data, but they're calculating that data and interpreting it in a different way. And I don't want to have people see that and think, oh, my FICO score is X, like Brian was saying earlier. So.
I was wondering, you are entitled to get a free annual credit report every year.
Absolutely.
Is that correct?
Yes.
And I use annual credit report, and they like have the three agencies. Is that right? Do you recommend that or no?
Yes, absolutely.
You do? Okay.
It's free.
I was using. Yeah, it's free.
Yeah. It's a good word.
People were questioning it online, but I've used it before, and I didn't notice anything. And if you're working, you know, doing everything you could, and once you've done all you can do, you know, keep up with everything. About how long do you think? I know it's going to depend on the person, but what are your ranges you think? You said it shouldn't take 7 years, but what do you think if you've worked it good and you've done all you can do with your report, about how long would you think?
Are you asking me and my company or you?
Well, both.
Okay, I answered like this because remember, according to CROA, Credit Repair Organizations Act, I cannot guarantee, you know. So basically what I tell my clients is this, is that give me 6 months, because the way our pricing model is, I tell my, see, you all see me. My clients don't see me. Everybody's virtual to me. So when I'm talking to my client, I tell them, hey, I am 6'7", 280 pounds. And the way that my pricing model is if I don't get anything done for you, then I don't eat. I like to eat. So my model is I put skin in the game. You know what I'm saying? So give me 6 months, and then we'll talk after that. Because it's not just disputing and challenging information. It's also about credibility as well. Because remember, credit repair is only roughly it's about the payment history. We're attacking the payment history, the 35% of your score. But what about the other parts of your score that we can kind of affect, the debt ratio part? So some people may not need the disputing part. They may need some strategies on how to build credit. So we assist our clients with that as well. But to answer your question, I say, give me 6 months. Can it be longer than that? Absolutely. Have I had clients and have clients right now in our program more than 6 months? Absolutely. But it's been a lot of clients that we got done in 3 months. It just depends, because it's going to be you, the creditors, and the credit bureaus that got to sing all together and hold hands. And sometimes the credit bureaus don't like to hold your hand. It just depends. I don't mean for it to be open-ended like that, but I'm just being honest with you.
Are there any disadvantages to not having any credit, so you pay all your credit off and you just don't get any more?
I don't think there's any disadvantages. I don't think so.
Get a mortgage or get a car.
Are you saying that if you
are held against you if you don't have any credit at all?
Oh, well, yeah, that would. I mean, they're looking at how to use the money that you've been approved for if you have it. So you definitely gotta play the game. You gotta start getting a credit card, go buy an auto loan. You know what I'm saying? And secure a credit card if you want to build your credit. You know, there's a couple other strategies. You can go to your bank, and this is probably the old school name. It's called the passbook loan. Basically, you know, you have money in your account and you get a loan against it, you know, and you're paying it back. You make sure that the bank is reporting to all three credit bureaus and not just one, because you want all three. That's another strategy. It's a couple other strategies that you can get. There's some gas cards that sometimes they report to all three credit bureaus. So that's other ways you can kind of build up your credit as well.
Like your line of credit?
You can get that as well. If you can get it, absolutely.
Let me just pause here for a second with the Q&A, because I want to make sure you get to the business side for about 15 minutes, and then we're going to open it back up to more Q&A. Okay.
All right, cool. There will not be a long pause before this one, I hope. Actually, just talk about this from the cuff. Is anybody interested in learning about building business credit? All right, cool. Yeah, building business credit. I'm going to tell you the steps. I'm not even going to go through my presentation. I'm just going to tell you the steps of what you need to do. I ask a lot of people, you know, about business credit, and they're like, oh, yeah, I have a business credit card. It got my name on it. It got my business name on it. And I'll ask them, did you use your social to get that card? Well, I don't know. Well, and I'll ask them a series of questions about, you know, of what it entails to build business credit. So, business credit, so I don't ever really say the words business credit, because people are like, whatever. But if I tell you that I can get you money through your EIN instead of your social, then people are like, hey, I want that, right? And I'll have to say, in most cases, and I'll get to that in a second. So the first thing that you need to do is you need to make sure that you need to make sure your business is fundable. So when you go into a bank and put in an application for a business loan, they're going to ask you for your name, your social security number, your income, where you work, you know, your profit and loss if you have a business. They're going to ask you for your DNA, your blood type, your firstborn, all that stuff. And they're going to put this profile together, and they're going to poke holes in your profile, right? Banks do not like to lend. They only lend based upon the weaknesses of your profile, right? Which is kind of backwards, right? I put my money in the bank, I should be able to get some money back, right? No. So we at Spring Hill Financial, we're a little bit different. We're kind of like creative. We lend based upon strengths that you bring to the table. So the strengths that you bring to the table are the three C's: credit, cash flow, or collateral of your business, right? You bring me one, I can get you some money. You bring me two of those, I can get you more money. If you give me all three, I can get you a lot of money. So, but with respect to business credit, our niche, when you walk into a bank and you think you have the perfect profile, you know, your credit scores are pretty good because they're gonna check your credit as well, they will deny you sometimes and won't even tell you why you got denied, right? I think that's unfair, right? So what we do in Spring Hill is first we make sure your business is fundable, and there's a credibility checklist of what you need to do to make sure that your business is fundable, whether you come to us, whether you go to a bank or a credit union, wherever. I'm gonna tell you about a few of those items that's on the list. And the banks do not tell you about this, but we pull back the curtain on these items with our clients. Number one, you have to have an entity, right, to do business credit, right? And talk to your accountant to make sure that whatever entity that you're getting from a tax purposes, you know, is gonna be good for you. You need to have a website. Sometimes that's optional, depending upon the business. If you're a real estate investor, you probably don't need a website. It'd be nice to have a landing page saying, hey, I'm a real estate investor, and this is a house or two that I've done. Because banks like to take a look at what you look like on the internet. Bless you. Bless you. When you get your entity, go to the IRS and get your EIN. Right? Get your EIN. Another item in the credibility checklist is your business number. Financial institutions, they want to see an 800 number, a local number, and believe it or not, a fax number sometimes. Yeah. And they will deny you if you don't have a fax number. Some of the lenders will deny you if you don't have a fax number, believe it or not. So we want you to do everything. So whatever funding that you're going for, you know, after you set up everything, you will not get denied, right? Another item is your number, your local number needs to be registered with the 411. There are people getting denied funding because they're not registering with their number with the 411. Right? It's not that, I don't think it's that much. I don't think it's nothing at all. You go to 411.com. I don't think so. What other things? It's another thing, another item on the list. Oh, in the financial world, the age of your business is not determined by when you created your entity. The age of your business is determined when you opened up your business bank account. Okay? Any other items that I can tell you about? Email address. Remember, everything that I'm telling you is to make your business look fundable, look like a legitimate Fortune 500 company. Email address. They do not like personal email addresses, Yahoo, Gmail, Hotmail. They want to see something like brian@springhillfinancial.com. And they will deny you if you have a personal email address. Yes.
If you close it and then reopen it, would the first time or you start all over?
Start the clock over again.
Thank you.
Don't close it. if you're going for funding, if you know you're about to go for funding, don't close it. Yes. Anybody over here? You know what? I'm giving you the black and white answer. I would communicate, if you're going out for financing, I would communicate with them, saying, hey, this is what went on. You know, that's why I had to close it, and they'll probably give you some leeway on that. I'm gonna give you the gray answer. That's the gray answer. There are a few more items on the credibility checklist. You all can actually Google that. And there are some sites that'll have, it's about like 8 or 9 items that we go through with our company, with our clients to make sure that their business is fundable. So that's number one, making sure your entity is credible. Number two is when you create your entity, we talked about, you know, getting the EIN. Now what we want to talk about is setting up your Dun & Bradstreet profile. Dun & Bradstreet is the largest credit bureau in the world, but here in the United States, it's only used for business. And that is the start of you beginning to create a credit profile for your business. Yes? I'm going to get to that. Yep. So after you create your Dun & Bradstreet profile, you're going to want what's called a DUNS number, D-U-N-S, DUNS number from Dun & Bradstreet. Basically, this is an identifier for your business. Basically, I would say Joe's Diner in Seattle has a different identifier than Joe's Diner in Tallahassee, right? Now you have your entity, you have your EIN, you have everything, you went through the credibility checklist, you have your DUNS number. Now it's time to go after some funding, right? But before we talk about that, the other two major credit bureaus on the business side is TransUnion and Experian. So you want to set up your profiles there as well, because the lenders also sometimes report to those credit bureaus as well. So you have Dun & Bradstreet, Experian, and TransUnion on the business side. No Equifax. Cool. So now, if anybody that has created their, first of all, let me tell you, when you go into Dun & Bradstreet, go in, just set up your profile, get your DUNS number, and get out, because they're going to do some heavy upselling. You're not there to spend money. You're trying to get money, right? Just get those two items and get out. So now we're going after the funding. The first layer of funding that you can go after on the business credit side is what's called, what we call the starter cards. It's nothing but store cards that are probably up to maybe $1,000 credit limit. It may be companies that you don't need, but you got to play the game to get to the funding that you do want, right? So all the funding that you're going to get with business credit is going to be in the form of a card, whether it's a store card or a basic business credit card that's tied to, so it's not going to be a loan. That's going to be the loan. It's going to be a card, right? So the starter cards can be anything. You probably heard these, Uline, Quills. There is something, there's a secure business credit card that you can get that the underwriting guidelines is pretty flexible for it to report to your business credit, right? So the way business credit works on the algorithm end is it's a score that goes up to 100, right? And it's only about your payment history, but it's way different than on the FICO and VantageScore end. Your payment history goes like this. The earlier that you pay, the better your Paydex score will be. That's the name of the business credit score, is Paydex. So basically, if you get, say for instance that you get Uline, and it has a net 30 payment term on it. Basically, you pay every 30-day cycle, right? We want you to pay on the 23rd day, because you want your scores to be 80 and above on each of the credit bureaus, because it's going to help you out to get even more funding as you continue on through the process. So the starter lane, these are vendors, like I said, Quills, Uline, very small companies. You may not need them for your business, but you got to play the game to activate your profile to get a score and move to the next lane, the next layer. The next layer after the starter is the store credit. This is your Staples, your Office Depot, your Amazon, gas cards, Exxon, Sunoco, all these companies. Their underwriting guidelines are a little bit more stricter, and they're going to want to see what have you been using previous, right? So you want 5 trade lines of the starter lane, 5 different accounts, right? We want you to use that at least 2 or 3 rounds, right? Activate your score. Now you're showing some credit history. Next, store credit, same thing. Get 5 of those. Those you're probably going to use probably more because you recognize those companies, right? And anybody that's in business, you're driving around, of course you're going to want to get the gas cards. You know what I'm saying? So that's your that's a store credit. Yes, sir.
Credit Karma, or they go to Experian.com, something like that. Like, where could you go to see your business credit score?
Dun & Bradstreet has something, Experian has something, and TransUnion has something as well. There's other companies out there too that you probably can go through. But, yep, absolutely. Yep. The next layer after that is optional. This is what's called fleet credit. Fleet credit is where you can purchase vehicles, maintain vehicles, or repair vehicles. So if you have a business that that needs vehicles, this is another option for you to get access to that through your business credit. And it's a layer that's going to look at, okay, what kind of store credit did you use? Okay, what's the starter lane? How are you using that credit? So everything builds on each other. That's the reason why a lot of people stop at the starter lane. They're like, oh, well, I want the all cash line of credit. That's what I really want. Everybody want that, right? But you got to build up to that, right? So you have the starter lane. We have the store credit. We have the fleet credit, which is optional. Last is the cash credit. Amex, Discover, MasterCard, Visa. Pretty much how that works is if you have a Staples card that's, let's say, Home Depot that's 15K, right? It's reporting to your business credit. A Visa will match 15K. They'll match the largest vendor credit that you have. That's it. That's the process. You got to go step by step. You got to use the cards. It normally takes about 4 months to get access to the funding that you really want, 4 to 6 months. The part about the credibility checklist, you getting access, you know, you creating your DUN and Bradstreet profile, your Experian, your TransUnion, and getting a DUNS number, you can get that probably within the first couple of weeks, 2 or 3 weeks. Everything else is you getting access to the funding and using it and showing and proving, you know, as you go through to get more funding, you know, through the program or through the process. Yep.
We're just going to open it up for questions real quick, and then I'm going to go back and talk about the one item on the board. First question I have for you is, you said when you open up the first layer of cards, make sure it's not opened up under your Social Security number. If you already have, because some people already are in businesses, and they have business entities, LLCs, DBAs, et cetera. What do they need to do, or what's a clear indication that card is not opened up under their Social Security number?
It's already been opened?
The card's already open. They've been using it for years. How do they definitively know that it's not under their personal?
If they did not have a Dun & Bradstreet profile, we know that it's not reported to business credit. But a lot of these lenders, what they would do is, you're still the personal guarantee of the financing, but they may not report it to your personal credit.
So basically you're saying when you pull your credit report, the debt that is on these cards
sometimes
is not being reflected on
sometimes. Your absolutely. Credit report. Absolutely. Yep. So, but if you miss a payment, it will reflect on your personal credit. They're going to pop that on there. I need to say this too, because I did not mention this. I always say that it's getting access to funding through your EIN instead of your social. I should have said in most cases. Here's the reason why. Because a lot of people have used business credit and had done bad things with the funding. They didn't pay it back. They knew it wasn't going to report to their personal credit. They knew all they pretty much was like, well, you know what? I could just dispose of this entity and create another one. They wised up a little bit. So now they want to know, how old is your business? Remember the bank situation that I told you about. Some of them are saying that if your business is not 2 years old, then you need to be a personal guarantee of the funding that we're going to approve you for, or get a personal guarantee for that. You're not going to be a personal guarantee forever. It's not with all of the funding. It's just that some are just changing over time to protect themselves, right? So just want to let you know that too. If your business is less than if your entity and your bank account is less than 2 years old and your credit is not where it needs to be, you need to, and you don't want to use another guarantee in your business to get into your business, then you need to figure out a way to, you know, fix your credit or work with somebody that can help you out with that. Yes. I'm going to say, I don't know. I don't think so. But you can go on irs.gov and see. I don't think so. The DBA is almost like, yeah, you don't want to create an entity? I don't think so. I don't deal with DBAs. I only deal with just entities. .gov. Yep. You probably could do a Google search for that and see, you know. We don't know that. Okay, then. We do know that. But is it a DBA of the company with the EIN? Is that what you're saying? Are you saying because McDonald's has the EIN?
Their own.
So it is a DBA that
their
has their EIN.
Business as McDonald's. EIN, it's tied to whatever this particular franchise.
We can table that conversation for now, because in a couple of weeks we're going to have an attorney here, and they'll be able to answer that question. So
I need to be in that class.
So, Sasha, you might be able to answer this one for me. I'm not sure. So, let's say I have an investment property that's in my own name, my personal name, buying another investment property. I want it to be an LLC for, you know, protection and for tax purposes. What's the difference between doing a commercial loan in my entity name, the commercial loan, or 20% conventional? Like, what's the difference? What's the benefits there?
The legal answer to that I'll leave to the attorney.
Okay.
The tax answer I'll leave to the CPA that's coming in a couple weeks. Okay. I will tell you that it's all about recourse. Okay. And one of the things that we have to think about is that, and this is the reason that we're bringing in different speakers, because you can listen to Brian give you information about credit, and you'll be charged up and heading out, and you'll say, okay, I got it. And then a week later, you'll hear Teresa come in and talk about taxes, and you're like, and you'll sit back and say, okay, I got it, and then you'll run out. And then you'll hear Dan come in, talk from a legal perspective, and you're like, wait a minute, okay, wait a minute, because the advice that you're receiving is coming in context.
Right.
There's legal advice. There's tax advice. There's insurance advice. There's credit advice, okay? And what you need to do is to figure out what is the common denominator for you and what's going to make the most sense for you. And the answer for you may not be the answer for somebody else. So we'll defer some of those for the other speakers.
Okay, awesome. Thank you.
One quick question. The last, I think, two or three cars my wife and I, we bought through our savings directly by cash. Would it make sense to build our credit by getting a car loan and then paying it off before interest hits?
You mean paying it off before it reports to your credit? I understand. Well, if it does not, if it doesn't ever report to your credit, then you're not going to get, you're not going to be able to build your credit. When you're financing it, yeah, that's when they're going to report it to your credit report. There. So you're looking to build your credit. There's other ways that you can do that without you know trying to do that. Secure credit card. You can do. Remember the passbook loan situation that I explained a little earlier. I'm gonna give you my card, and we talk about some other strategies as well. If you're interested in that, cool, no problem.
If you sold the entity, would you be selling the EIN as well, or would that still would that follow you, or would that be sold?
The EIN is this probably gonna be more of a legal question than anything. So I'm going to say, put this in pencil, pen. I'm going to say that it follows the entity, but you might want to come back for the class, and I'm going to need to get a recording of that as well.
The question, let me answer to you this way. Okay, I'll speak from real estate perspective, okay? If I have an entity and I have an EIN number that owns property, I can sell that property and not close my company. The question comes down to, when you sell your entity, is your business officially over? Are you getting out of the business? If you're getting out of the business, then close on the EIN. If you are going to take those proceeds and invest into a different business, or you're going to redirect your efforts, and if you want to keep the same entity open, and sometimes that's a legal question because there is historical liability that you still carry even though you may have gotten out of it, you may want to shut that down, okay? But that's a question that you want to ask the attorney.
Yes.
I purchased my house in 2011 with a 30-year mortgage, and I want to refinance it at a bank that has no closing costs, and all they'll ask me to pay is my attorney fee and the interest rate, I guess, for a month, which is very inexpensive. And it would be from 30-year to 15-year. So I want to shave off the 7 years I don't have to be paying all that money out. Understood. Is that a good deal, you think?
Okay, so let me just jump in real quick, Brian, and just do the refinance thing.
Yep.
Okay, so and then we can go back if you have some more questions. We're over time tonight, but I think it's okay. We have Brian's here from Delran, New Jersey, down near Cherry Hill, Philadelphia. So I was really excited that he was willing to come up and spend some time with us. So here's the deal about refinancing, okay? Conventional wisdom, if you're not going to get anywhere between 1.75% to 2% of a reduction in your rate, it doesn't make sense, okay? Why do I say that? Number one, you've got closing costs, okay? You've got recording fees. You also have a thing that a lot of people don't understand, don't know about. It's called a tax. Welcome to New York. You pay 1% on every dollar that you borrow up front. So you're borrowing $100,000 on a mortgage. There's $1,000 in fees and taxes to New York State every time you do a transaction. It doesn't matter if it's the first acquisition, if it's a refinance, or anything else. What most people don't know is that the vast majority of mortgages that are out there have this component built into it already. You can go back to your institution and you can ask for them to reset the terms without going through another closing, without paying a New York State sales tax on a tax of 1%, without all the other fees. You just basically want a modification of the terms. I want to go from 30 down to 15 and I want to lock in the current rate. You ask for it. If that mortgage allows for it to be done one time during the course of your mortgage history, you're going to be able to get that done. It's not going to cost you really anything. I've done it once before. So that's how you can do it. I applaud you
for not wanting to pay the interest. But when you start thinking about modifications, if they're not going to modify it, if you're going to have to go into this channel, then what you need to do is you need to sit back and do a realistic assessment of your situation. How long am I going to continue to own this house? And I mean, when I say real assessment, I mean being real, okay? I'm doing one right now where I sit back and say, am I going to own this piece of property for another 10 years, realistically? Am I going to own it for 7 years? If I were older, I'd sit back and say, why do I want this two-story colonial? 5, 10 years from now, I might not even be able to go up those stairs. Let's just be real about where we are. When you're honest with yourself, you have more pertinent information to make more informed decisions. Do I like the way that this neighborhood is? Do I like the way that this community is shifting? Am I ready to prepare to pay these taxes for another 5 or 10 years post my kids being out of school? I'm not really tied to the school district anymore. Do I really want to go ahead and maintain this landscaping in this yard and de-weeding for the next 10 to 15 years? Or do I not? Condo living is appealing to me. That's my part. I'm just, okay. So my point is, when you put everything back on the table, that's the information with which you need to go ahead and make that decision. It's not just, can I lower my payment by $100? Because when you go through that cost-benefit analysis of yourself, that self-assessment, it may come down to, you know what? It doesn't make sense to modify. It doesn't make sense to refinance. What I really need to do is I need to sell and I need to move, okay? And I'll pay the fees on my new property. But you only get there when you're honest with yourself and you do a real self-assessment. The other thing I would say is when you start doing some of these numbers, when you factor in $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 in fees, you got to sit back and say, well, if I'm going to spend that kind of money anyway, what would it look like? Let me take a look at my amortization schedule. And these are very easy to get. You go online, Google it, amortization schedule. They'll give you the formulas, open up an Excel spreadsheet, and type in exactly what it says. And it will show you, okay, so what's your mortgage balance today? What's your interest rate? What's your term? How many months are you into it? I'm into month 87. And if you're going to make an extra payment of $5,000, how does that change my numbers? And how does that change my amortization schedule? That $5,000 may already knock off 3 years. And when you're starting to talk about a 15-year mortgage versus a 30-year mortgage, the increase in monthly payments is going to be like $150, $250. If I go ahead and add this $5,000 and I start adding $250 a month, you may find out you can pay off your mortgage in 13 years. So you have to get into the numbers. And the tools and the resources are available online. Everybody can copy, okay? I mean, we used to get, you know, in trouble in school for doing that. But, you know, today it's a good thing, okay? So the point is that as you take a self-assessment and as you really take a look at the numbers of what you're putting out there, you may be surprised at the answers that you actually find, okay? Okay, well, I want to thank everybody for coming out tonight.